And joining Andrew Bishago this hour, William Brett Stillings, born in Virginia, raised in the intelligence community, the son of a father employed at the Lockheed and NASA's JPL. He was a mechanical prodigy who repaired television sets without instruction at age four. I don't even think that's a field anymore. Nobody repairs TVs. He has served in the United States Navy, like I have, and worked in the biotech field. In 1980, Brett was enrolled in the Mars training class that included Andrew, what they say is Barack Obama, someone by the name of Regina Duncan. We'll get the reason on her, and sent to Mars from 81 to 83. Here's William Stillings on Coast to Coast. Hello, Brett. How are you?
Doing great, George. Thank you.
Good. And Andrew, you jump in anytime you want. You're on the line here with us, okay?
Certainly.
All right, Brett, tell me a little bit about your involvement in this program, the Mars Visitation Program.
Well, I was enrolled at a very early age through my father, who was a lieutenant. He became a lieutenant, or was a lieutenant in the Office of Naval Intelligence.
Okay.
And was part of the, or went on to JPL, NASA, and Lockheed, Skunk Works. And there was a... I really only got about a 1 month of warning that I was going to be doing a lot of the things that I was interested in.
Did they like take you? I mean, did you have a choice here?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. There was a very much a choice. I was asked, "Do you want to?" And yes, very much so. And it was such a short time that I found myself getting in the camper and going on on a camping trip again and preparing for this.
Now, at what point did you meet Andrew here?
Well, actually, very much at that time when I got in the camper in the early in 1980, in the summer of 1980. We loaded up the camper, and I got in, and one of the very first things my father said was, you're going to be meeting somebody who's time-traveled, courtesy of the U.S. government, and you're going to be, if you do your studies and do everything right like you're supposed to, you might get to do those things. And we headed off and headed up on a nice 9-10-hour trip and wound up in Shasta.
And did you ever think you two would end up on Mars?
No. That was the farthest thing from my mind.
I mean, at this point, William, do you believe you were on Mars? I mean, are you convinced of that? Or how do you know you weren't hypnotized and they just programmed you?
Oh, I've been over this for the last, in a life regression kind of way, for the last 7 months, and I mean, from everything that I put behind me, and what I grew up on, that it was a big success in my life as a kid, and that I got to do those things that a lot of people at the time, that I guessed didn't get to do, was without a doubt when I teleported. Is what one of the concrete affirmations was, where did the city go? Where did the buildings go and freeway and everything, the building that I was in.
What did the planet look like? What did Mars look like?
It had a really light blue sky. It was it was deserty, and there was one of the things of being an amateur geologist was that there was a lot of clay around, and it had a very had a reddish, very reddish ground. Distant was slightly lighter. Just very deserty. It had a chemical feel to it.
Did you see any critters, animals, anything like that running around?
I didn't. I saw on this particular one. I saw bushes, very small bushes, very small weeds and stuff.
Did you see any water, running water?
No, I did not.
You did not?
Not on this trip.
And tell me, Brett, about Ed Dames' involvement with this. This fascinates me because, you know, he's been a guest on this program for years, and he has never brought this up, ever.
So, no. he was our instructor at College of the Siskiyous.
Was he a good teacher?
He actually very much was. Very, very attentive. He handled everybody very individually and very systematically.
Okay, and you two are sure it was Ed Dames?
Yes. Absolutely. Without a doubt. We were...
Do you keep in touch with him now?
No.
You don't. Andy?
Yeah, I've Ed is one of my Facebook friends, and I've sent him a number of letters urging him to come forward and embrace the purposes of the truth movement and reveal his involvement, really not just in the CIA's Mars program of the early 80s, but he was also an individual that I worked with on a very limited basis in the Montauk chair apparatus when I was a child participant in DARPA's Project Pegasus in the early 70s. So Ed and I actually have a lot in common. I mean, we were involved in the early days of time-space exploration by the U.S. government, but then when the U.S. government selected a direction for that time travel to go, and the destination was Mars, Ed entered that program as well as one of the instructors for the CIA Army people that were training individuals like Brett and I to take the jump room to Mars and survive on a surface where there were, you know, a variety of different predator species, some of which we could outrun and some of which we would not be able to outrun. So he was a brilliant instructor. I mean, he would give us three or four sentences of factual information, very hard-boiled information about Mars, and then maybe put in a joke to kind of relax us about the startling information that he just shared with us. He was coming by our evening parties, first at the dorms there at College of the Siskiyous, and then when we moved over to the Finlandia Motel. So we're certain it was Major Ed Dames.
All right. This episode, going to Mars, why did it stop? Has it stopped?
I don't think it has, George. I mean, you know, one of the really startling things that Major Dame shared with us during our training was that he made a statement that Brett and I have corroborated down to the word, I mean, verbatim, and that was, he stated, and this is summer 1980, he stated that of the 97,000 people we have thus far sent to Mars.
97,000?
That was the fact statement regarding how many had already been sent. He said, of those 97,000, only 7,000 have survived on the surface after 5 years. I think he was addressing both the settlers that they were putting in place, but also those who were being sent, and hopefully with the intent of quickly returning to Earth, as Brett and I were.
How'd the other 90,000 die?
Presumably from predators, and also maybe from privation, in the sense that they were living in rudimentary structures on the surface. There's very little water on Mars. All of the food would have to be gained either through hunting or by having provisions supplied via jump room, which means you'd have to get, let's say, from your little cottage back to one of the jump room facilities to pick up provisions. So I presume that those 90,000 were either eaten or basically starved to death on the surface. But we looked at each other. I mean, this is how strange the material was in the class. I mean, Brett was 13 when we were being trained. I was 18. He was 14 when he first went up. I was 19 when I first went up. And we were looking over at each other in class going, did he just say that? That of the 97,000 that were sent, only 7,000 have survived? But George, this was 31 years ago. We have, during those 31 years, we have the statement provided, the estimate provided by the brilliant researcher David Wilcock, that the U.S. colony on Mars may now number 500,000. I mean, we have the picture that of one of the large bases that Bob Dean revealed publicly for the first time at the European Exopolitics Summit in Barcelona, Spain, in 2009. We have the great-granddaughter of a president revealing that she was invited to join the secret U.S. colony on Mars. So I believe in those 31 years, or now, you know, 28 to 31 years since Brett and I were going up there regularly between 1981 and 83, that there are bases on Mars that may house literally hundreds of thousands of Americans.
Right. Where would these bases be on the planet?
Well, they would be in the middle ranges of the northern and southern hemispheres because of the more temperate conditions at those latitudes.